Session number 15590, Phil Plowright, Reel 11.
Mr. Plowright, Reel 11. We were talking, there were two stories we'd started. We'll take the first one, it was about the capture of Monte Vecchio. If you could, you were saying that it looked like a picture postcard.
Yes.
Where you were. What was the position then?
We were about 2 miles from Monte Vecchio when we had the O group, and the plan was devised how we were going to crack it, because it looked a fortress, and the Germans were got a fine field of fire, and we'd got the battalion were going to be committed to take Monte Vecchio.
Did you have any support?
No, there was no artillery.
And you were the only unit?
Yes.
And what plan did they come up with?
They come up with the idea that the Pioneer Platoon were going to breach the walls, and then we were going to go in through the breach. And we lay up while all this was being hatched. We were there about a day, I think. And during that time...
Right at the end of August, according to this list.
Yes, it would be. It was still hot and dry. And we were laid up and resting a bit before the attack, which was to be a dawn attack, immediately following the... explosion of on the walls, or the breaching of the walls by explosive. And I remember there was an Italian came up with the usual story. He was a io partigiane, and he was going to play. He was a partisan, so he said, and he'd got a machine gun, and he'd got ammunition displayed, and a Beretta revolver, and he came there and he was bragging his head off about what was going to do in Monte Vecchio, and the lads were giving him cigarettes, and he was going to tell them how to get there, where there were no mines and all that, and we felt quite elated of having found this guy. We thought, oh, you're not going to get any mines. He knows where the mines are, or where they weren't anyway. So the thing went. Jimmy Hoy, as we called him, it was Lieutenant Hoy, Jimmy Hoy, dashing guy he was, with a big moustache and everything, and his team actually breached the walls, but we went...
Were you providing covering fire?
No, it was a dawn attack. Almost dawn.
Surprise.
Yes. And we moved into Monte Vecchio, and...
Did you come under fire?
No, not a lot. A very light fire. And we didn't find out until afterwards why it was so comparatively light. It was nothing like we expected. And when we got into Monte Vecchio, the houses... There were no civilians about. There were no civilians, and the houses had got great big crosses painted on the doors, and it was a diphtheria epidemic. And that was the reason that the fire had been light. Anyway, we got out of Monte Vecchio pretty well.
What did you do about the diphtheria? Were there any Germans left there with it, or...
Yes, there were Germans there, but there were no sign of any diphtheria. We never suffered any effects from it.
So what's the next thing that you remember?
I remember that, talking about this episode at Monte Vecchio, that we never saw this partigiani bloke again. We never saw him. When we moved into the attack, he'd gone. He was going to lead us, but he never did. And... we never saw him again. I remember, and at this time, we were fighting almost every mile of the way. There was opposition, strong points and prepared positions to keep breaking down.
Were the Germans fighting to the last, or were they tending to pull out? when it became hopeless? Or
mostly pull out. They often left odd ones, an odd one there to hamper and as much as they could, and did so quite well.
But the words of your unit fighting to the last in a position, they'd
pull out, and they used bullocks to pull guns out and things like that because of air attacks. The vehicles, motor vehicles, made such a dust that it became so obvious to air cover that we had got and were pinpointing them that they were moving back. And they kept moving back steadily all the way until the war finished. That was the attitude they took, hindering and hampering. I think by now they knew that it was hopeless, and they were hindering as well as they could. I also know that as it progressed, and we were moving northward all the time, the quality of the troops up against us was not so high as it had been. I remember the Hermann Göring division and the Panzer Grenadiers, because of prisoners that we'd taken, and the prisoners that we took later on, they were younger and older. A lot of the best troops had been pulled out to the European front.
Now, just trying some more names on you. Mount Zagarelli and the Triangle Crossroads, and Severlabate and San Savino. Do you remember anything about... That's a little cluster of operations.
I remember San Marino. I knew about San Marino because I remembered the song that came out in about 1936. I Dream of San Marino Neath Blue Italian Skies. I never knew in 1930-odd that such a place existed. And when we found out that we were going on, or when I found out on O Group, because it was in the O Group that the incident happened, the Germans were... They were supposed to give neutrality to San Marino, which was a republic within the Italian mainland. And we had an O group, and I was on this O group, and it was decided that they were going to attack because of the German positions giving us all the harassment that they were. And we climbed up a railway embankment on this O group, and on the other side of this, it was a hill with a rail. When we found the railway down below, if I'm making myself clear there, and we looked over the top, and there below was the railway, a single track railway line disappearing into a tunnel, and someone gave the alarm, and there were civilians by the dozen in this tunnel, literally probably 100 or more, and they came out, and we were trying to keep quiet, the element of surprise, and creep away again, ready to do what we were expecting to do. And there were goats in this tunnel, and women and children and what have you, and the noise they made of Inglese Liberato, and so on, and shouting and singing and all the rest of it. And in fact, we never went into San Marino. It wasn't... The Germans hadn't occupied the town itself. They occupied the heights on the other side. And there was no attack there. There was no need to enter San Marino, because when we found out from intelligence that there was nobody there. So the whole thing was just useless. Making the O group and doing the plans, there was no need. We crossed a dried up... The rivers were dried up now, of course. We crossed the riverbed on an attack, or we were attempting to cross a riverbed on a daylight attack, just advancing, and we were fired on very heavily on the other side of the river. So we had to withdraw back to cover, satisfactory cover, and while it became dark, and when it did become dark, we went across this river bed and went into an isolated house on the other side, where we consolidated. This was a platoon attack, and we, when it became light, looking out of the windows, or what was left of the windows of the front, it had been shelled previously to that. Our artillery had shelled it, and looking out of these gaps in there, we could, down below in a bit of a valley, we could see the Germans in slit trenches. And it was getting warm, the sun was just coming up, just warming up. And we could see the Germans chucking their blankets off and their overcoats off and everything like that, quite clearly. So they were surprised that we were there. And they were getting ready to receive us, obviously, from these slit trenches. And we were in this farmhouse, and then we were subject to a rifle grenade attack. These guys got down in the slit trenches, and they let loose rifle grenades at this farmhouse. We weren't bothered. They just bounced off or whatever. We were undercover. We had no casualties. And it went quiet. And Joe Dudley, who had been allocated the sniper rifle, he leaned out of this window in full view of these blokes down below and had a shot at one of them. And from the depths of the slit trench appeared a German helmet being waved about on the end of a rifle. And Joe said, "There you are, I've got him," he said, "I've got him." He hadn't, in fact. These fellows had been put there for hindrance, no doubt. And we stayed there till about midday, and it really got hot. And Joe kept letting loose the odd round of sniper fire.
The rest of you open fire?
No, we couldn't see anything. Joe reckoned he could see something that we couldn't see. But it did transpire that these fellows, only two or three Germans, gave themselves up and walked into our positions and were ferried back to the headquarter company and away back as prisoners of war. So in some ways that was quite humorous, or so I thought. But talking about the caution business...
Yes, you mentioned before.
Yes. There was I'd still got Michael Glover as platoon commander here. And again we attacked an isolated, or we were about to an attack, an isolated cluster of houses. And we were gathered around an old barn and a bit of a farmhouse, and the Germans were in front in a villa surrounded by Indian corn, which was quite high. And we'd attacked this farmhouse and that with small arms and dashed in and found no one there. So we formulated a plan to push on from there. And coming out of this Indian corn, there was a white flag shown. And Michael Glover shouted, and I remember this, "Oh, goody chaps, they're surrendering. Let's, you know, let's go," and that sort of thing. Anyway, they dashed off, left the cover of this part that we were in, and dashed off straight across the open ground to these, where the Indian corn was. And I'd got platoon head HQ, comprising of the two-inch mortar, the Piat projectile infantry anti-tank, Piat gun, and the wireless and the stretcher bearers. And I took those diagonally across to this barn affair, where we could see quite more, even more clearly, where what was happening up there. In the meantime, the rifle sections dashed off with Michael Glover. Couldn't wait to get to this white flag quick enough. And when they got there, we saw them halt before they actually got to the Indian corn band round this villa thing that we could see protruding out of it. And they all stopped, and they all laid their arms on the ground, took their steel helmets off, hands up they were, and marched into the Indian corn, and we never saw them again. They were all taken prisoner, Michael Glover included. And when we found out later on, there was a Tiger tank hull down in this Indian corn. Had I gone with the rest of them, I most certainly would have been prisoner. We never saw them again. So there was a halt from the proceedings there while we had reinforcements. And that was when Greenwood, Lieutenant Greenwood, and a lot more new chaps. And these new chaps turned out to be Geordies. They were almost all of them Geordies. I remember Knight and
Geordies, just a coincidence, or had they been intended for the 16th Battalion, DLI?
I don't know really. I never did find out how we came to get so many Geordies, because there were a lot of reinforcements came, and I seemed to get all Geordies. Another lot had Welshmen, because I remember on one occasion that later on they were calling the roll, and they all seemed to be Williams and Joneses, and they always gave them the last two letters of their last two numbers of their regimental number. So it was Jones 62 and Williams 24, and because there were so many of them. And that's just an aside.
Did the Geordies settled in all right?
Yes, without any trouble at all. They were good lads as well.
You were still 14, platoon, was it?
Yes. Yes, still C Company. Mm.
So what's the next incident, you remember?
We kept moving up, and
what about the 7th? Sevilabate, you're not sure, but you think that's where you played the organ?
Yes, I think that's where it was, yes.
Could you tell that story, though? If it's not Sevilabate, we can always correct it.
Yes. We were attacking a church, and we reckoned that we'd been told by intelligence that Germans were actually in the church. And we were attacking this church, and when we got there, the Germans had pulled out. And the men were consolidating the position, as they should do, as they normally would do, sentry it outside and check on casualties and first aid and all that sort of thing that was needed. And I was very interested in the organ in this church. And
what was so special about it?
Well, nothing, it was a church organ, and the chance to be able to play again. It seemed such a long time since I'd had a... That was first thing in my mind after we'd consolidated. Go and have a look at this organ. And I went up into the organ loft, and there was another couple of lads came up with me. I remember the name of one of them, it was Albert Pickstock. I don't know the name of the other one. And we went up into the organ loft, and I wrecked this organ, the huge bellows with two big wheels on either side with handles on. It was obvious that it was a two-man operated pump, long before the days of electric pumps and that sort of thing, which we know about now. These huge bellows, two big wheels, and with handles on, and they just wound them, and the bellows opened and closed, producing the air to the organ. So I got onto the organ stool, and these two guys started to pump, and it was a gorgeous organ. I was making what I thought was really nice music.
What sort of thing were you playing?
Certainly not stuff meant for churches. Playing songs, possibly. Things that I'd heard and wanted to play again. However, I don't remember exactly what they were, but it certainly wouldn't be church music. And I was playing away there, and suddenly there was a great explosion, and a great hole appeared in the church wall in the bottom, as I found out. There was a huge blast, and the great blast of air came up, and shrapnel punctured the bellows and the pipes of the organ, and it turned out that an 88mm shell had come through the side of the church, killed one, I think, and injured one or two others who were down in the church itself. And we found out that there was a German OP in a water tower, and they'd obviously seen us go in and directed artillery fire onto it, and an 88mm shell came through through the church wall. We pulled out very quickly, and the ironic part about it was I was blamed, but my bloody awful music, they said, it was that caused it. Well, obviously it wasn't, because the OP was way out of earshot of organ music.
Any other instance you remember from? Can I suggest some more names to you, perhaps? Mount Germano. Do you remember that at all?
No, by name. No.
Or Taverna Verrucchio.
Monte Verrucchio, I remember.
What do you remember of that?
It's just an attack. There were so many incidents. Every day was an incident. We were moving on, we were being fired upon, we were mopping up. The incidents were too numerous to mention. There was something going off night and day. And it went on like that right up until the Gothic line was virtually over and we were on the plains.
When you pulled that, had you been trained in street fighting at all? Or what were the techniques of street fighting that you used?
We were trained in street fighting in England, initially. It was just another facet of the infantryman's training and experience as it occurred. For instance, at Salerno, going back to Salerno, we were mopping up on houses, in houses. German troops were in there, and we were actually, as silly as it was, firing across the street, and on the other side of the street were our own men. It was confusion. There was no proper training for, there was no proper method for street fighting. When I say fired on our other men, there was a German motorbike came from the end of this street and rode down the street, and people were firing at it, and our men were on the other side of the road. And the Germans never got hit. They turned round and rode back down again and got off without being hit. It reminds me of another occasion where we were attacking a German position, and this one was a different operation. We'd got artillery in support, and there was an artillery officer with us, artillery officer, actually with us, the infantry, and he was giving the instructions to the artillery, and it was a lifting barrage. And on the opportunity, when the opportunity arose that he was backing up the signal back to the artillery, lifting the barrage, ceasing the barrage, we had to go in. Well, they were stonking this position that we were attacking for hours. Kept lifting, and we kept moving up, and they were giving it all the pounding that it could. This would be the crossroads you were talking about.
Triangle crossroads.
This will probably be it. And they hammered this, and we moved in, and there was a half track all the Germans piled out of these positions into this half track and rode off. And we'd given it the most terrible pounding, and they'd given us some stick as well. And they seemed to escape without any bother at all. Just the luck of the draw, I suppose.
What about yourself? I mean, did you find yourself getting more nervous and edgy with this constant fighting?
Yes. Yes.
How did it show itself?
Well, it showed itself, I think, ultimately in we had a mile by mile, if you like, contact with the enemy. We were losing men all the time. It resulted in me being wounded as well. And we were...
When did that happen?
That was late that summer. Very late that summer. And we were attacking it was a whole battalion attack. They were using everything. And it was...
The attack was on.
I remember it was very hot.
But you don't know the name of the village?
No. And we were moving along a road because there were these roadside shrines there, the Madonna and all that. And we could hear the Germans winding their moaning minis up and the noise they made. And they were dropping all around, and I dived into this roadside shrine for cover, along with another fellow, and the mortar bomb exploded quite close, and I got wounded in the head, and blinded.
How badly wounded?
Only a pinprick. It's still there. Just small shrapnel wound.
A deep cut.
Yes, quite a deep cut, but it knocked me out and blinded me for some reason, or I couldn't see anything anyway. The next thing I knew, I was being carted away, and they gave me sedative stuff, you know.
Did you panic at all when you couldn't see?
No, I didn't. I didn't have any feelings at all, as I remember. I didn't have anything. And they took me to the regimental aid post, and then the casualty clearing, and then I could see, and I felt better then when I could see. I did feel a lot better, and the padre came, Padre Semple, and he said, "You're going into hospital. Is there anything I can get for you?" I said, "Yes, I could do with a pipe." I wanted to smoke my pipe and I hadn't got one, it had gone. And the Padre, I went to a British General Hospital and I had dysentery, I had a stomach problem as well, and wound at the same time. I was very thin and gaunt and well seen into by then. And the Padre came to see me there and brought me this pipe, and it was wonderful to be able to smoke a pipe, and I filled it up with the regulation tobacco, which was plenty of it, and lit it and started to enjoy it, and the pipe caught fire. It was a Red Cross pipe, and the Padre, we were talking, and he noticed that, and he gave me a pipe. He was a pipe smoker, and he gave me a proper pipe. But this Red Cross pipe, it just burst into flames when it got hot.